We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast. Hello and welcome to the Archaeology Show, episode 104. On today's show, I talked to Simon Young from Lithodomos VR about traveling back in time from the comfort of your own home. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. And our guest today, as I mentioned in the introduction, has been on the Archaeotech podcast several times. I don't know if you guys have heard the Archaeotech podcast, but you probably should check it out. And I'm going to link to the two episodes that he was on. And these, Simon, go back all the way to June 27th, 2019 was episode 108. And then you were all the way back on episode 45 on January 26th, 2017, almost 4 years ago. So welcome to the show, Simon Young.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, there you go. And we brought you back a third time now and on a completely different podcast because, well, you guys are just doing super cool things. So Simon runs Lithodomos VR, as I mentioned in the introduction. And first, Simon, why don't you just tell us in its broadest sense what Lithodomos VR is, and then we'll kind of get into what you guys are doing. Like, what's your mission statement, for lack of a better word?
Great. So Lithodomos means stone mason in ancient Greek. So litho, stone, obviously, and domos, house or mason when they're put together. And we were founded in 2016 off the back of my PhD thesis on ancient Greek and Roman cityscapes in Asia Minor. And there is a connection there that I'll go into. So I was looking at the urban development of cityscapes from the Hellenistic period to the Roman period. And I was very keen to try to understand what the lived experience on the street was for a casual observer or a resident of the city at different phases within its development. So I had all these maps and plans and elevations of different buildings from different sources, and I was having a bit of trouble visualizing how it all came together, especially in a multi-phase development. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if I just threw these plans and elevations into a 3D modeling program like SketchUp and do some rough models of the buildings and conduct a kind of, you know, view shed analysis of what I could see. Well, suffice to say, that is a massive rabbit hole that I fell into. I started loading in the plans and elevations and got a bit frustrated with SketchUp eventually and moved on to a program called Blender, which is an open source free 3D modeling program. And I used scale model meshes of these buildings and cityscapes to create an environment. And really, I was just aiming to put together to produce some images for my thesis for the list of figures. And around that time, around 2015, the Oculus Rift development kit was shipping, yeah. And a colleague of mine had been given one, and she said, "I have no idea about 3D, and I know that you're working on 3D, so here you go, make it work." I went, okay. So the second rabbit hole opened up as I started on producing a workflow to get these models into an Oculus Rift headset. One day, I'll never forget, I put on the headset, fired it up, it worked, and there I was standing in one of my models. And it was just incredible to see everything, yeah, to scale, to have this sense of being there. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. And cool for me personally, I have to say, at the time, because it was all about my desire to know what it looked like. So then I showed some colleagues and some friends, and they thought it was pretty cool as well. Then I met this guy at a bachelor party and told him about what I was working on, and he really loved the idea, showed him, and he ran a tech incubator. So we he decided to invest in the idea. We developed a business plan. And in early 2017, we raised just under $1 million to fund Lithodomus, the company. So
nice.
The basic idea of Lithodomus, let's say at the beginning, was to create virtual reality experiences for people visiting archaeological sites so that they could visualize what things look like through a mobile virtual reality device on site. So through 2017, we traveled extensively through Europe and met up with tour guides and museum directors and archaeological site directors and launched a few on-site virtual reality experiences and set about creating a content library of, well, actually now it's over 500 individual reconstructions of the ancient world, mostly based in Europe. So that's a bit of the background to the company.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I remember when we first started discussing this, I went and picked up a Google Cardboard just because of the podcast that we had recorded and downloaded a few of the applications. And I got to say, it was so cool being in that environment, what you guys were doing. And it was, you know, just being able to walk around. And I've actually physically been to some of the sites too that I remember looking at. And, you know, long time ago when I was in the Navy, but I was at some of those sites when I was in Italy. And still being able to look through them and see them and then hear some of the sounds and then the way that you guys had it structured, it really did put you in an immersive experience. And I mean, it wasn't full, you know, VR like Oculus or something like that. It's not like I'm wearing a bodysuit and can feel the textures and things like that. But still, your brain compensates for so much of that when you're in that immersive environment and you take away your distractions. And I thought it was just a really, really neat way to do it. And I've never been a fan of museums, to be honest. I mean, I like going to museums and seeing things that are unique and interesting, but I'd rather see artifacts and things and features in their context and see how people used them. And I, you know, I'd love to move to a situation where we can interact with something in a little more, like I'd rather see an object laying on the ground or on a table and pick it up in VR and look at it and examine it rather than see it behind a glass case in a museum display that says, this is what this was used for. And I think that's what stuff like this leads us towards. So that's super cool. That's super cool. So, well, we're here talking now. I mean, what are you guys up to these days?
So picking up on that concept of the artifact behind glass, we've had a lot of discussions about that internally. And it's such a 19th century approach to displaying artifacts. It's like taking a collection of butterflies and sticking a needle in them and putting them behind a case and then neatly writing out a paper label underneath with the category of the butterfly. And I think we've moved on a little bit from that period. I think we've entered the digital age and the museum experience is catching up but needs to accelerate. A lot of museums, I have to say, a lot of museums are amazing, doing this amazingly well and digitizing their collections and their experiences. But for the most part, most museums are still stuck in the 19th century with that classification of artifacts out of context behind a glass case.
Yeah. The Archaeology Museum in Naples, Italy, my wife and I went to it, I think it was 3 years ago now when we were in Italy for a few weeks. We probably talked about this the last time we had a show in 2019. But, you know, that was one of the ones that, honestly, the thing that most impressed me about that museum were the big, massive sculptures, the marble sculptures and things like that, because that's just kind of on a scale that you can't even imagine. But then a lot of the stuff from Pompeii was literally that, just like, here's case upon case of beads that are made of this. And I'm like, well, that's great. Why do I care? You know, it just didn't make any sense to me. So I love what you're doing with these ideas.
So I guess at the beginning of Lithodomus, intuitively, I had a sense that it's one of my initial pitches actually for the company was that it's difficult to connect to artifacts in a glass cabinet. And the whole idea of taking artifacts and putting them into their original context within virtual reality potentially had the capability of transforming an existing collection into something that's interactive and immersive. However, I would say that VR has gone through a very interesting journey since Oculus, I think, led the revival of the mm-hmm. concept. There was a lot of hype in 2015, 16, 17 about virtual reality taking over every aspect of our lives, and it really hasn't. It hasn't taken off and met the expectations of enthusiasts and supporters. In fact, the penetration of virtual reality in households is less than, I think, 0.01%.
Do you think that's a cultural thing or a technological thing? Is the technology just not there yet to be accessible to us? Or, I mean, I have a friend who just got back into his PlayStation VR. He's had VR for a while, and for some reason, he just like rediscovered it. Now he's posting all over Facebook about how he's exploring No Man's Sky, the PlayStation 4 game, right, in VR, and just like, you know, changes your whole perspective of the game. But you're right. I don't know too many people that either A, have one, but then also B, actually use it, you know, on a regular basis. So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think it is? Is that our ability to just not understand it and get into it, or is the tech just not there?
I think it's a question of adoption waves. I've seen a really interesting chart, and I think if you Google it, it's pretty easy to find, about adoption rates of radio and television. Mm-hmm. And what you see is that the initial release of the technology has a modest or small uptake, and then it rapidly declines. And then several years later, once people are used to the idea, there's a massive uptake of the technology. So I think we've seen the first little bump, and we will see a larger uptake of the tech in the future. Mm-hmm. I was watching a documentary on the Australian Broadcasting Commission's channel, our ABC. Mm-hmm. It was about a family living back in a modern family living in the 1930s and 40s. And apparently, when TVs came out, there were massive debates about which room they should sit in, and how sitting rooms needed to change, and where they should go in relation to the sofa, in relation to the coffee table. It was a big thing. Mm-hmm. I think in most people's homes these days, the television is the central part of the lounge room.
Yeah, if not in every room as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I do think technology does have a role to play. I think that the Oculus Rift, with its external sensors in a room, made it quite difficult to set up. It was quite expensive as well. Mm-hmm. Facebook remains very committed to virtual reality technology. And I don't know if you've had a chance, or any of your listeners have had a chance of trying the Oculus Quest 2. But it's amazing because it's fully free roam, so you can walk around in a virtual reality space with no sensors. So, yes, it's a massive leap forward, and also the price point has dropped considerably. I think they are retailing at $299, which isn't too bad, and the resolution is incredible.
I might buy one right now while we're on a break for our friends. I mean, that's because honestly, when I was talking to that friend of mine who's gotten back into his PlayStation VR for like No Man's Sky, I'm not too much of a gamer myself, but I do have a PlayStation 4, and almost because I wanted to get the No Man's Sky game, because there was a whole archaeological thing going on about exploring and cataloging that world, that progressively generated universe. Hmm. So I was interested in the VR aspect of it as well. But like you said, with the no sensors aspect, this is what's keeping me from the VR, because my wife and I over the summer moved into an RV. We're in a 36-foot RV, and we're in different places around the United States now. I know. And plenty of room for the PlayStation, plenty of room. We got a TV, but because of the configuration of our living space, I could use the VR, but I have to be plugged into the PlayStation, which is on the opposite end of the RV and the entertainment console from where the TV actually is, and you still need the camera as well to basically monitor your head movements and other things. And I don't think the lighting is good enough in there. So I can't really use it at all because of the way they've designed their technology. But it sounds like this Quest 2 from Oculus would be usable because there's no external sensors. It's all built into the head unit, right?
Exactly. In fact, what you could do, if you have a 5G connection, or if you download the content previously, you could go out, mm-hmm. to a deserted crossroad at the full moon and draw a play space that's 10 meters by 10 meters and go for it. Be nothing to stop you from doing that. Yeah.
That's totally crazy. All right. Yeah. Well, I think that's actually a good point before we get into too much other things we might extend on one of the other segments. But let's take a break right now, and then we're going to come back and talk to you guys about what you've been getting into during this whole no contact, everybody stay at home COVID time and how your business has changed, what you guys are into these days. So we'll be back in just a minute with Simon Young from Lithodomos. Back in a second.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Zencastr. Zencastr allows us to record high quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months or go to Zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
All right, welcome back to the Archaeology Show. And this is episode 104. And I'm here with Simon Young from Lithodomos VR. So Simon, as I mentioned, 2020, we're recording this at the end of 2020, and this episode is coming out in mid-December of 2020. So how has this whole crazy worldwide pandemic, do we need to say worldwide? I think pan implies worldwide. Anyway, worldwide pandemic impacted your business and Lithodomos VR and the direction you guys are taking. That, and as we talked about pre-recording, Google stopping support for Google Cardboard and things like that, and just kind of everybody shifting focus on what's important. So where are you guys at right now?
Yeah, so at the end of 2019, we were doing a review or a stock take of where we were as a company. And one of the big observations was that it was a shame that our content was locked up in solely virtual reality glasses. On that notion that penetration of VR is so low and VR never really took off, we started thinking of other ways that our content could be deployed. And we had done that in various apps where you had a 360 mode without launching into VR, or you could, or we did some 69 videos that promoted the experience. So we thought to ourselves, we'd look more into other ways of deploying the content. So we went on a big trip through Europe, when it was still possible to travel, October, November last year, and visited a lot of museums and archaeological sites to get a lay of the land, if you will. And what we really noticed is the emergence of the immersive space. So that means that a lot of popular exhibitions employ a combination of digital content deployment techniques within the same experience. So that might mean that you have, for example, a 360 cinema or a tablet console or a projection onto architecture or a big projection onto a wall. In fact, one of the most impressive exhibitions I went to see was one on Claude Monet in Barcelona. And they had put together an incredible combination of different types of digital content. You would walk into a room that was a warehouse in size and scale. There'd be projections of Monet's paintings on the floor, on the walls. and beautiful classical music from the period, and beanbags strewn around, and people just really laying back and enjoying the show. And then you'd move on to a different room where they had some AR, where you'd actually get to draw your own picture of what you thought a Monet painting would look like and put it under an AR camera, and then it would transform it magically into a Monet painting. And wow. After that, a virtual reality experience where you entered one of Monet's paintings. So we see this tendency to mix or combine different digital platforms or deployment methods for using the same themed content. So we thought, well, this is what we need to get into. So we were looking at, we developed a product portfolio for museum installations that includes 180 to 360 cinemas, architectural projection of our content, smart television projection of our content, and tablet stands instead of those paper labels for artifacts, as we were discussing earlier, VR group pods, and also handheld AV guides. So we were out and about making partnerships and talking about projects within museums when COVID hit. And of course, public gatherings and museums suffered slightly from this turn of events. So we still think that a cross-platform deployment of our content is a good idea. So we focused our energies into what we call the consumer multimedia guide. So this is a product where visitors to museums and archaeological sites can use their own device to access 360 reconstructions and other digital content as a guide through a site or a museum. So it turns out that it's very popular. It's a very popular concept because visitors are using their own devices rather than sharing an audio guide that's been disinfected or some other type of hardware that the museum gives out. So it's entirely contactless.
Yeah.
And it's web-based, so it works on any device apart from a Nokia from 1998, a Nokia phone. So I won't work on those, but any smartphones within the last 5 years, more or less. So we launched that product about two weeks ago. It's called Ancient World, and I guess we'll place a link under the interview later after. So that's where we've been going. One other thing that came up from talking to museums and to visitors was that our virtual reality experience on site depended entirely on the guide who was taking their group through the archaeological site to explain the history of the site and to give the context for the 360 3D reconstructions. So what we've done with Ancient World is we've sourced local guides to record an audio narrative to accompany the 360 reconstructions. But they do it as if you were in the ancient world. So we have, for Rome, we have a local guide called Alessia, who is describing what you're seeing within your AV guide, pointing out the different points of interest, and is with you as your virtual guide through this journey in the ancient world.
That's really cool. I like it. You know, you started this whole thing out talking about when you're doing your PhD, you know, wondering what it was like to stand on the streets of the places that you were studying, right? And this really is leading us all into that direction, which I think is the best way to understand the past. You know what I mean? It's the best way to really get people in a headspace of thinking about not just
look at the pretty artifacts and the pretty sculptures and the buildings and things like that. But, you know, what was life really like for these people, and what can we learn from that? Yeah. What can we learn from their experiences and what they did and you know, what they shouldn't have done and just how people lived in the past. And not only that, but it could be expanded to how do people live in other countries right now? It doesn't always have to be the past, right? This experience could be, what's it like to stand on the streets of, you know, in Melbourne, Australia right now versus India versus China versus Russia? What is that, you know, what is that like? As Americans, I'm relatively well traveled. I wouldn't say nearly as well traveled as the average European probably, but I've been in, you know, a number of continents and different places. And I feel like that just gives you a different perspective of reality and of the world and of people in general, and probably tends to make you a little bit more compassionate too. Whereas people who never leave their hometown or their home state here in the United States, they just get a little insular and a little nationalistic and start thinking, you know, well, what I see around me is the best possible scenario. So that's the only thing I'm going to support. And I don't know where I'm going with this. It was just making me think of the world in a wider perspective, not just from a historical perspective, but current world affairs as well.
Yeah, I was having a conversation the other day about this, and I suppose this is one of the impacts or changes that COVID-19 has brought about, is the resistance in consumer behavior to participate in events that are digital and remote. That resistance has broken down massively.
Yeah.
One of my friends and colleagues, Professor Andy Goldman at Gonzaga University in Washington State, we were talking about its effect on education, and he was commenting that probably in the United States, you could say that pretty much all students have had some type of remote learning experience in 2020.
Right.
And speaking of his own colleagues and other professors in archaeology, they have all been thrust into the age of remote distance learning or through Zoom or whichever platform they use. So as a kind of a global behavioral shift, this has opened us up to the possibility or the acceptance or the willingness to go into a virtual tour, to imagine that you're remotely somewhere. And that's really significant, I think.
Well, and even take it farther than that, right? Because universities right now, you have to go prior to 2020 and probably post 2020, you're going to go into a classroom. You have to go all the way to the university, live there, take their classes, be with the professor and your students. And there is value in that. And I think we're all realizing that, like you said, two things. One, virtual meetings are not impossible. We can actually do it and we can be successful and we can do that. Talk to anybody who's podcasted, right? Like I've never, you and I have never been on the same continent together. And yet we've done three shows so far. So we know that this is possible. But then also, I think it's shown us the value of face-to-face communication. There are some things you can do in face-to-face communication that are just a little bit more difficult. The chance encounters, the side conversations are more difficult in a Zoom meeting with 40 people on it, right? But that being said, the technology you guys are developing and using, I mean, could also really be used for stuff like this. I mean, why should any university have a room anymore with people that have to go there, live there, spend half their tuition on dorm rooms when they could just stay at home or stay wherever they want and attend virtually into a virtual classroom experience, not like a Zoom room, but a virtual classroom experience where you can still be with your peers and interact with them and do things. And, you know, I think we've all seen science fiction movies and things where this is the case. And sometimes it all goes horribly wrong. But I think taking the bright side of this pandemic, like you said, it's opened our eyes to the possibilities of virtual interactions. And if we could have the technology to support that, because, you know, one of the reasons that people hate Zoom meetings is you've got sometimes 20, 30, 40 people sitting on a screen and you don't have an appropriate screen for it. You're using an iPad, you're using a 13-inch laptop. But if we all had a wall screen at home that we could sit in front of that had everybody right there, and it was just the technology was more conducive to the environment and the event, But right now, those two things aren't matching up. But I think VR could possibly be the easier answer for that than a 42-inch computer screen, which will cost you $8,000. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah. We've been actually working a little bit. We've had a few meetings now in an Oculus Quest 2 application called Immersed, where they set up a workspace. You take a photo of your face, or you upload a selfie, and it pastes it onto an avatar. And we're in a big workroom with whiteboards, 3D sound, and it really makes a difference. It's so much better to be able to turn around and speak to somebody, or you know, pass them something, or to expand the whiteboard, or to annotate the photograph. We're a lot more present in that immersive space. So having said that, imagine with our 3D environments that we've developed, the archaeology professor or high school teacher or history buff or enthusiast appearing in the Roman Forum for a lecture on the Roman Forum, and the instructor taking the group around the Roman Forum and explaining each of the buildings or the people and what they're doing, the activities. Yeah. That would be very cool. And we have the technology.
Nice. And the technology is getting cheaper and cheaper too. And in the last few minutes of this segment, because I don't want to spend too much time on this, I'm just curious about it from a theoretical standpoint. But, you know, VR's, as you said, it's coming along. It's progressing, even if there's somewhat of a low spot from the high that we had a few years ago. As technology curves go, it's going to go back up. But what about the other technologies related to the VR experience? And I'm thinking, you know, I've read a lot of sci-fi and seen all the movies, you know, the full, everything from smells to the full body tactile experience. You know what I mean? Have you guys done any research or have any long-term roadmap plans that include those other senses? Because audio is clearly a thing that you're doing and that other people are doing, and video, but what about all the other senses to make this a fully immersive experience?
And I have to agree with you there that I do a lot of research into that myself. I'm completely up to date with Star Trek and with The Mandalorian, of course. So I'm very take my research very seriously.
That's right.
I think, well, haptics is a big thing, isn't it? The touch feedback and 3D sound as well. And I think I kind of want to segue into augmented reality glasses. So there's this sense that you have this overlay of the world through your virtual reality glasses. The Oculus Quest has cameras so you can see where you are if you need to, so you don't bump into anything. Facebook and Apple are working on, well, Apple, we're not sure, working on augmented reality glasses. So glasses that you would wear as if they were normal glasses to overlay AR experiences to the real world. This convergence of reality with a digital sense of being is probably the next big step. Smell is a bit trickier, I think. I'm not sure how you would do that without placing an implant in the brain or creating some kind of device that can fabricate smells. It's an interesting nice. Time.
Indeed it is. All right. Well, with that, we will take our final break and come back and wrap up this discussion with Simon Young from Lithodomos VR. Back in a minute. You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our TeePublic store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show. Welcome back to the final segment of the Archaeology Show, episode 104, with myself and Simon Young from Lithodomos VR. So You know, Simon, we're going to talk about a little more about what Lithodomus has to offer here, but there's something we were talking about before we started, and I wrote the note down, and I want to talk about it. So Web VR, tell me all about that and what it is.
Well, so Web VR is a concept we all know about, the Internet of Things, and the whole concept that the web covers everything. But there is this exciting innovation within browsers, which is at Web VR. Now, you might think to yourself that Web VR means that you're within an Oculus Quest headset, and then you bring up a virtual browser, and you see Google, and you do a Google search with your digital fingers and find the lolcat images you were looking for. But that's not what it is. Web VR, it's the idea that you can enter a room scale free roam environment that is streamed to your headset. So let's take an example. Let's say that I'm in a virtual lounge room where I've had my meeting with my friends and colleagues, and I look over at the virtual bookshelf, and I walk over to the virtual bookshelf, and there's a virtual book on ancient Rome. I pull down the book, I open it up, and I see an image of the Roman Forum animated in a way that you would expect the Harry Potter newspapers to be animated. Then I tap the picture of the Roman Forum, and the entire content is streamed at that moment, and I'm transported to the Roman Forum.
Wow.
Suddenly I'm in a new environment. I look over there look up to the balcony of the Palatine Palace, and I say, I want to teleport up there. I teleport up there. The content streams again. So I start going from place to place through links in a virtual reality web.
Nice.
This is really taking off in the sense there's a lot of development going into it. And also, we've been a little bit, let's say, constrained by apps and the app stores. You may recall the whole situation with Apple and Fortnite, the standoff.
Yes.
And that kind of brought to the forefront the power of the two big app stores with their terms and conditions and their massive commissions. And there's a tendency to move away from apps and back to web browsers. And web browsers, as we all know, are becoming quite sophisticated applications capable of a lot of functionality, such as, you know, recording podcasts or internet banking or Zoom meetings. And this functionality, Web VR, is another one that's emerging. So I'm really excited by that concept. I think it's got a great future. I think everything's moving to the cloud anyway. So having a virtual reality version of the ancient world that you can freely navigate would be a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I one of the reasons apps took off as much as they did was because of how difficult it was and still kind of is for some parts of the world to gain internet access on a consistent basis. I'll tell you what, I mentioned early on that my wife and I moved into an RV. When you leave that nice little bubble of your home with your high-speed internet and you go on the road and now you've got varying situations and things are changing and you've really got to look at your data usage, and it's just, it becomes a whole different ballgame. And I know not everybody's in that situation, but it lets me know that, hey, not everybody has the best internet all the time and can access all this content, but that's quickly changing. And, you know, the ubiquitousness of 5G and how that's starting to become more prevalent in more areas. I don't know how it's doing in Australia, but here in America, most of the major cities, yeah, it's picking up. And most of the major cities have 5G and they have spots of 5G access. I just got the iPhone 12 Pro Max. So I now have a 5G capable device, but I haven't been in the 5G service area yet. So I haven't been able to play with it. Yeah, looking forward to that. And then, you know, the other thing we're looking forward to that just really blows all this stuff wide open is Starlink from Elon Musk.
Yes, and, exactly. Yeah.
As an RVer, really looking forward to that as something that'll give me high-speed internet pretty much anywhere I want to be. And that's going to be amazing. So you're totally right. We had apps because you could download an app in its entirety onto your phone and typically not have to worry about that. But, you know, a lot of apps do require an internet connection to stay updated and to sometimes download content from the web. And man, as we're shifting more and more away from that, though, there's no reason why I can't just be in a web page and access it from anywhere on any device. So that's super cool. It's amazing where we're going with this stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I was going to maybe talk about also impact of COVID on the European tourism market and museums and archaeological sites within the context of what we're doing. So obviously there was a massive shockwave throughout Europe when COVID-19 hit, and to a great extent that's ongoing. And we saw, as I mentioned at the beginning of it, a complete shutdown of archaeological sites and museums in most major European destinations. However, what has happened in the meantime is a lot of local governments have been in the background working on strategies on post-COVID, what's going to happen when we do reopen. And also a keen, let's say, observation or realization on the precariousness of the mass tourism market, that within the blink of an eye, countries that completely depended on millions of visitors to sites every year lost their income. And were devastated. So governments are very keen to find ways to ensure that that doesn't happen again in the future, a more sustainable approach to tourism and cultural heritage. And one of the big pushes from a recent report by the European Travel Commission is to promote local tourism, to get people back to the sites, from the Italians going back to the Colosseum or Greeks going back to the Acropolis, and finding new ways to invigorate sites and attractions. Part of the recommendation actually is to partner with innovative tech companies. So we've found an increasing level of interest from museums at this period. You kind of imagine that they're sitting in their offices, twiddling their thumbs, going, "Okay, let's just wait for this to be over." That's not the case at all. They are planning, and they are looking at innovation. They're looking at ways to open, to attract local visitors again through digital innovation. And so we're finding that slowly the interest in our immersive exhibition portfolio of products is increasing. So going back to that analogy of the glass case with the butterflies or the pottery sherds, one product that's garnering a lot of interest are the tablet consoles. So this is basically an iPad in front of a stand that has an interactive display where you can see an artifact within its context and learn about it. And that's quite a simple way to invigorate an existing exhibition stand, is with a tablet. And they're very easy to install and immediately digitize the collection. Yeah, we also found that we think that the role of VR, especially in 2021, is perhaps not as the show stealer, but as an important tool within a larger digital strategy. So like the Monet exhibition I was touching on earlier, virtual reality experiences are one of the attractions within a larger digital strategy. So visitors might come to see the 360 cinema projection, or they might come to see, to use the new AV guide that they pick up at the office. And over in the corner are the VR pods that some people might partake in, some may not. That sense of deploying the content over a wide range of different hardware.
Nice. That's really cool. You know, and thinking about just the iPad in front of the display or whatever at a museum, I mean, we're easy, right? As people, if you give us just anything else other than a glass display case, we're pretty happy. So even just interacting with something, I'm thinking about like national parks here in the United States. You know, they often have something. There's a lot of displays with stuff you have to read. Don't get me wrong. And sometimes that's okay if it's brand new and interesting. Sometimes it gets a little boring. But anytime you have something something you can interact with or move or just get into, even if it's just a simple, simple concept, we're all in, right? There's a line around the door for it, and you want to do it. So this is definitely a technology that's just waiting to be deployed.
Yep. You walk into an older museum room and you see a flashing screen. Yeah. Make a beeline towards the screen. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think the ancient world platform we've developed, which is web-based, and the secret is not so much of a secret, is that it's built for web VR. So we will be in the medium future create a way to launch into virtuality from ancient world. But nice. In the meantime, Ancient World Multimedia Guide embraces this idea of cross-platform deployment of content. It's an audiovisual guide that you can use on a smartphone, on a tablet, on a laptop, project on a smart TV, use for Zoom. And because of its platform nature, it makes it very easy for museums to provide existing digital content or their own audio narratives. And it really is quite a simple off-the-shelf solution for any museum who's looking for a contactless audio-visual guide in the light of COVID. So if there are any museum curators or archaeological site directors out there who are interested in finding out more, please do get in touch with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been sitting on the Ancient World website for a little while here and just watching it cycle through some of the really cool images and things on here is pretty neat. We're definitely going to link to this in the show notes, arcpodnet.com/TAS/104. And that's going to be also in your podcast player there. So check that out. So Ancient World is really the place people go. If you go to lithodomosvr.com, I believe that's linked in there too. Yep. Yeah. Just didn't have that in front of me. You'll find Ancient World there, but it links to a separate website, but we'll also link to that in the show notes. So definitely go take a look at that. And there is a free tour on here as well. If anybody wants to check out some of the other paid tours, do we have anything for them regarding that?
Absolutely. So we will be offering a special coupon for a 50% discount to listeners, and we'll send through that redeem code for those for that discount after the show to paste on the website.
Nice. Well, that's much appreciated. That's going to be super cool. So what do you suggest somebody check out when they're first coming to this site? Just find something you like, or do you have a favorite?
That's kind of like asking a parent who their favorite children are. They're all great. It really depends on where your interest lies. So we start from Stonehenge, Neolithic, and we go right through to Hobart in Australia, so 1829, and a few sites in between. But we have Rome, we have Athens, we have Ostia, we have Pompeii, we have Split in Croatia, we have Corinth, we have Delphi, so and more. So there's 22 tours available at the moment, and there are more coming in the pipeline in the coming weeks.
Nice. Nice. That's really cool. Yeah. And I see the links to the apps that we have talked about in the past down here as well. So you can still get those. Those are still available. If you still have a Google Cardboard or something like that, you can use them with it, even though Google's not selling it anymore. It still works.
That's right. And if you have an Oculus Go, one of our most popular Oculus Go apps is linked down there. That's Athens in VR. So that's it's not quite free roam, but you can teleport from place to place and learn all about Athens in the Roman period, visit the Agora, the Panathenaic Way, and the Acropolis, and even go inside the Parthenon.
Oh my, that's pretty cool. I like it. All right. Well, Simon, this has been fascinating. I hope our audience has gained some insight into this and what they can do and where they can go. And definitely check out the Ancient World website, ancient-world.co, again, linked in the show notes so you don't forget it. And when you go to those show notes, again, arcpodnet.com/archaeology/104. I was looking at our recording link up here. So arcpodnet.com/archaeology/104 for your coupon code. So you can check some of this out. There's various price ranges and just pick the one you want, drop in the code and go have some fun. So again, Simon, thank you for this. And I hope to have you guys on again maybe not 3 or 4 years from now, but you know, sooner to talk about some more great things that you guys are doing.
Definitely, Chris. Thanks a lot for having us on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. You can also find us on the Lyceum app, a podcast app just for educational podcasts. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV Traveling America, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.